Questions?
That's progress. I mean, progress.
Yeah, lots of questions. Pick them out.
Yes. Yes, it can be, but I
still have to get the
albums.
The Astronomy 211. Just the first two questions.
So the two first true and false questions?
True/false.
So these have to do with conservation laws, and the second one is remember, conservation laws say that something is a constant, and the conservation law of energy says that it's a constant, which means you can't destroy or create it from nothing. So what's wrong with the first part is that it talks about the energy being used up. And energy isn't used up. It's always, however much energy there's been, it's still there because of conservation of energy.
Isn't it just that, like, it's impossible to, like, put that together, like, once it's used, like, once it's converted, then it's
used? Yeah, so it ends up as low temperature heat, and then there's not much you can do with that heat. So there's lots of heat energy in Lake Superior, but you can't do anything with it. So it's there, but maybe not useful.
For number 12 on the true false, is it because light moves at a constant speed always?
Yes. Yep, the speed of light is the speed of light.
It's just the frequency that it is.
Yeah, frequency doesn't change the speed. How can we determine that there is sodium in the sun without actually analyzing material from the sun in the chemistry lab? And that's something that we touched on today, right? We can take the spectra of the sun and we can see where the absorption lines are, and the absorption lines are fingerprint for what the corresponding elements are. Light is always produced by accelerated charge. List and describe two ways the acceleration is achieved and the type of light produced. So the three standard examples that we talked about are like a radio antenna, and there we have the electrons that are going up and down the radio antenna. We've got, so this is a typical, say, AM radio antenna. We have a microwave, and there we have electrons that are circulating in a magnetic field. This was called synchrotron radiation. And then we had the X-ray tube. So the X-ray tube, we slammed high-speed electrons into a copper cylinder, and when they deaccelerated, that's when they produced light. This was called bremsstrahlung, braking radiation. I don't know how to answer that. So if you don't know them, it's probably not going to count a lot off. But I can imagine questions that, for this question here, I don't think names are required. List and describe two ways of acceleration was achieved and the type of light produced. So you don't need the names to answer that question. But I could imagine, for example, a true and false question that might use the word synchrotron radiation. You'd have to figure out what that was. More questions?
What type of light is produced by the third?
So that's X-ray. That's how your X-ray tube works. 25. How does a fluorescent light work? How, why is the light produced? Why is it different for different gases? So what those tubes consisted of was just the gas under consideration, say neon, and then we had 5,000 volts that was connected across it. And what was happening is that the electrons are accelerated to high speed and they're slamming into the atoms. But it's not the slamming that directly produces the light the way it is with an X-ray tube. They're not going fast enough to produce X-ray light. Instead, what happens is the electrons, so here's a picture of an atom, an electron that might be orbiting in the ground state, when an electron slams into it, it's excited into one of these outer orbits. And then in about a billionth of a second, it'll fall back down. And it's the falling back down that's going to produce light. So high-speed electrons excite gas atoms, and when the electrons in the gas atoms return to their original state, they produce photons of light. So that's fluorescence. Same exam, I take it. So here we got some old telescopes, and what we're going to pay attention to, what we're usually given, and given in this problem, is we're given the diameter, which is to say the aperture, and the F number. And from that, we're supposed to figure out what's the important stuff. And you remember that the focal length is not usually given. But we can calculate the focal length because the focal length is going to be the F number times the diameter. You did problems like that for the end. So focal length is particularly important for magnification, which is pretty much the same thing as image size. You remember that the longer focal length lens that you use produce the bigger images. The F number controls the brightness. In a backwards way. So the smaller the F number, the brighter. And F numbers are usually written like this, F/16. 16 is the F number that we're talking about. And of course, the bigger the diameter, the more light we're going to collect. Okay, so for these three telescopes, we've got, make kind of a little table here, we've got the diameter and the F number, and we'll have to calculate the focal length. So we've got a 15.6, 16, I don't have my calculator, but yeah, it's going to multiply out to something like 220 inches. And we've got a 20-inch F10, so that's going to multiply out obviously to 200. And we've got a 36-inch 14, and I'm not sure I can do that one in my head, but that's going to be big. Bigger than the other two. Okay, so which telescope would you use to photograph dim objects? So we're looking for the smallest F number. That guy. So that was the Whoopee. Which telescope would you use to see the finest detail? So I guess that isn't on the chart because that doesn't so much have to do with the telescope as where it is. So you remember that atmospheric seeing is the big problem for telescopes. And Whoopi flew on the space shuttle, so it was above the atmosphere. So Whoopi would be great for looking at fine detail. Which produces the most magnified images? That's the biggest focal length. Okay, so for resolution, think atmosphere, less is good. And I guess it's also maybe helpful to remember that good is smaller, right? smaller resolution is seeing more fine detail. Looks like jumps in spectra and all that sort of thing. So we got this table, quantum labels labeled A and B. So A is where energy is being taken from light to the atom. So that's going to be an absorption line. And B is where the atom is giving up energy. So that's going to be an emission line. Correspond these in directly on the below graph. Okay, so in terms of absorption lines, things that are like that could be produced by A, we're looking for a large amount of energy, so that means a short wavelength, and absorption lines are where the dip goes down. So this thing looks kind of like this. There's a dip there, there's an up there, there's a dip there, there's a big down there, and there's an up there. So I don't know, this one looks like a good candidate for A, the absorption line. Now for B, we're looking for something that has, just looking at the diagram, looks like it should have a third of the energy. And if it has a third of the energy, it should have three times the wavelength. So A is at, you know, something like 300 nanometers. So we're looking for an emission line that's at something like 1 micron. So B. The bigger the jump, the shorter the wavelength. And so we have to have the energy jumps look to me roughly a third. So we're looking for absorption and emission lines whose wavelengths differ by a factor of 3. Ah, another spectra question. We got graphs on the other page, and we're supposed to answer lots of questions. So for the first question, the peak wavelength, so let me kind of sketch these things. I obviously can't graph them as accurately as they are here. Looks kind of like that. So the peak, this is the peak. So the peak wavelength we want to read right down, or up, it kind of doesn't matter. Up is closer, and it looks to me like it's at about 0.3 micrometers. If blue has a wavelength of 0.4 and red has a wavelength of 0.7, what's the ratio of the amount of blue light to red light? So for blue light, we're going to go at 0.4 and over, and we're going to go at 0.7 and over. And we're going to read those amounts. Yeah, I say this is 14. You don't have to be particularly accurate about this. And I say that this is 4. So the ratio of the amount of blue to the amount of red is going to be 14 over 4, which is close enough to 3 as far as I'm concerned. So sketch in one how the graph would change if it were cooler. So when we dim those lights, when we reduce the temperature of the filament, two things happen. It gets a lot dimmer, and the color shifts slightly. So it would go from white to maybe red or maybe only orange. So what we need to do is we need to shift this peak out to longer wavelengths. And the new curve should have less light at every wavelength. So the new curve should be every place below the previous curve. So anything that satisfies those conditions like that is fine. So some things that are not fine, right? So that's not fine because it doesn't lie below the previous curve. That's not fine because I didn't shift the peak wavelength.
And that's for if it becomes cooler?
Yeah, so cooler, less light, goes to longer wavelength. Is the question the opposite?
No.
Okay. Yep. So if it were hotter, then we'd shift the peak wavelength to shorter wavelengths, and the curve should be every place above the previous curve.
So it would either be like above and like left or below.
Yeah, but I hesitate to say that because often, not particularly in this question, often there are absorption lines like this. And you remember that the location of the lines is an atomic property, right? Sodium always has its absorption lines right here. Those are the sodium D lines. It doesn't matter how hot the star is, they're always going to be at the same spot. So you don't change these lines. So if I were going to draw a cooler star, maybe I'd start with that, but then I'd put these lines exactly where they were before. Yeah, so we talk about changing where the continuum is without moving the lines. So it's tempted to say you just move the thing over to the left or to the right, but you don't move the lines. Here there's no line, so you'd be safe. So we did the cooler, right? Oh, how would that change the ratio of the amount of blue light to the amount of red light? So you can see it, boy, you can't see anymore. I hope you can see that the amount of blue light is, if I shift the whole thing down like this, before, I don't know, this must not be matching, but before there was clearly less red than blue, but now with my shifted thing, there's more red than blue. There's less of everything, but the ratio of red to blue has increased. Well, blue to red has increased when we cooled the thing down. If the star were more distant, how would the ratio of the amount of blue light to red light change? So if it's distant, all you're doing is diluting the light. So maybe there'll be half as much red light, but there'll be half as much blue light too. So the ratio of the two will be the same. So the color of a star, which is basically the ratio of the blue light to the red light, that's only going to change if the temperature of the star changes. The brightness of a star, that'll certainly change according to its distance.
So then would that be just like making the same,
if this is the star where it is, if it were more distant, it would look like that, where if I did it right, that fraction is the same as that fraction, et cetera. I've just shrunk the curve down by a third or a half or something like that. So the ratio is therefore going to be the same as what it was. Sketching through how the graph would change if it were moving rapidly towards us. So this is Doppler shift. And Doppler shift is going to move everything, the lines and the peak. When things are approaching us, they go to shorter wavelengths and higher frequencies. So if the original graph looks like this, and let's put some lines in there, even though there aren't any, the new one would look exactly the same, just shifted over. So now we shift the lines and the graph. All the frequencies change with the Doppler fit, with the Doppler effect. Did I get them all?
Is that called a blue shift?
Yes, yep.
Why is it called a blue shift?
Well, because we generally think of blue as short, so we're going in the blue direction.
Okay.
And a red shift would be the opposite, where we're going to the longer direction.
Okay.
So if something's like coming up towards you, like if it were to change color, it'd probably go towards blue, and then as it went away, it'd be like red.
So again, the speeds have to be unbelievably fast, so it's not something you could ever literally see. But if a car was approaching you at 10% of the speed of light, the headlights would look blue when they're approaching and they look red when they're receding. Yes, all the if you want, you can learn Orion. I'm not thinking that it's a likely one to be on there. So we got Cygnus and Hercules and Pegasus. That's a moderately hard group. Say again? 38. Oh, so we just did 38, didn't we? Oh, on the other test. So it's a similar but different problem, right? And it's pretty much obviously a sure thing that you're going to get a similar and different problem. So the x and y axes are going to be wavelength, and I like the amount of light, but the intensity is fine. Energy flux is what they were labeled online. The blue light, so mostly what I'm looking here is for the order, but technically speaking, the blue light is going to be, let me need to draw this sometime. So we've got 200 and 400 and 600 and 800 and 1,000. And this thing kind of, it's going to peak at about 700. Looks kind of like that. There's something going on at 400, and there's something going on at 800. There's something going on at 600. So it looks kind of like that. So this is 38, 212. So this is wavelength. In some theoretical sense, it might be frequency, but you can see these things are in meters, nanometers, so it absolutely has to be a wavelength. And the book, I think, probably labels this intensity. I actually like the amount of light better. Flux is what it was called online. Any of those things will get you full credit. And I guess I didn't ask it here, but, oh, I did. And the name of this plot is a spectra. So that's basically an exact repeat from the big quiz. So the blue light, someplace around there, around 400. And the red light, someplace around 700. And the ultraviolet light is shorter than blue. And the infrared light, it doesn't ask, it's longer than red. And visible light would be between those. Yeah, so visible light includes, I hope, blue and red, right? And green and yellow, and all those are together visible light. So roughly from 0.4 to 0.7 is where visible light is. And like on the big quiz, I really didn't care whether you got the number right. I was mostly looking for the order, that the ultraviolet is shorter than the visible light, and blue is shorter than red, and infrared is longer.
What's the x-axis label?
Wavelength. Absorption line, that's where we're missing light. And the emission line is where we have extra light. Energy levels. So we're supposed to draw energy levels that do stuff. And the main thing is this emission line that has to be where the electron is falling down because energy is given up. And here the electron has to be moving up. This guy is way out here, but long wavelength is less energy. It's not more energy, it's less energy. And this thing is more energy. So we need to have a small jump where the electron is going up and a big jump down where the electron is, big jump down to produce this emission line at short wavelength. Numerical value of the peak wavelength. Looks like 600 to me. Sketch how the graph would change if the object were cooler. So that's the same story. Move the peak. So I'm moving it from there to there. Make sure the curve is every place below the other curve. Don't move the lines. Sketch how the graph would change if in the quantum leap producing your emission line, the initial energy level was slightly higher. So if this level were slightly higher, it's a bigger jump, and a bigger jump means shorter wavelength. So that peak would move over a little bit to the left. Sketch how things would change if the electrons made quantum leaps corresponding to your labeled absorption line less frequently. So every time an electron goes like this, a piece of light is going to be eaten up. And that's why there's less light at that particular wavelength. So if that's not happening as much, this absorption line won't be as deep. More questions?
Number
28 on 212. So atomic energy levels are these things that we're talking about here. They're possible orbits that an electron could have. And it's not exactly true, but I think it's a fine way to think about it, is you can think about these energy level diagrams as kind of being this piece of this curve. So we can have an orbit that's close to the nucleus or further out still. But really what matters isn't distance, because in fact these electrons are fuzzy things, they don't have a distance. What really matters is the energy of the corresponding orbit. So this is really a matter of energy versus whatever. So an atomic energy level is a possible orbit of an electron around the nucleus. What's waving in the case of sound? So remember, sound is cases where we have compressions and rarefactions. So in the compressions, we're going to have higher density, higher pressure, and it turns out higher temperature. If you compress air, it gets hotter. And if you expand air, it's going to be at a lower pressure and a lower density and a lower temperature. So any one of those three is a perfectly good answer. Mostly people would usually answer pressure is what's waving. But all three of those are equally good. In the case of light, electromagnetic stuff. And that's seems like a pretty obscure thing, that's good enough answer for me. So we have lots of electromagnetic stuff, no electromagnetic stuff pointing in the other direction, no electromagnetic stuff. So just regions of lots of electricity and little electricity. So the main point, of course, is that light isn't made of anything. So it's able to go through vacuums just fine. Whereas sound is made up out of compressed and uncompressed air, so you can't have sound in the absence of air. So I guess I'll mostly say yes. So the sound doesn't have to originate, though, in the water. So, I mean, a dolphin swimming in the water is going to make compressed water and expanded water, and that's going to propagate just fine through the water. And it turns out at a higher speed than it does through the air. But if there is a sound in the air, it will penetrate the surface of the water, and it'll make compressions and refractions of water. So you can hear somebody talking if you're diving in the pool.
That's not dependent on there also being... Never mind.
Okay. No, but the altitude is very important for the resolution. Right, so Palmer's, I mean, nobody actually uses Yerkes anymore. I think they might have sold it to an amusement company. But it's neat to look at. So it's, you don't put telescopes that you want to see clear stuff through clearly at more or less sea level, like at Lake Geneva. So what matters here, of course, is the same thing that matters before. We're given the diameter and the focal and the F number. We need to calculate the focal length. And if I recall correctly, well, we could work it out if you wanted. If I recall correctly, though, the focal length of the great refractor is big, and so it's going to make the largest images. But otherwise, Palomar is going to be superior to see dim objects because it has a smaller F number and to get clearer images because it's on a mountain. To 11:37. Ah! Say again? Yeah. So we have an equation for temperature. And we're supposed to name what these symbols are. So the T sub 0, subcircle with a point in it. This symbol indicates the sun. So that's the temperature of the sun. And this is the radius of the sun. The A is the semi-major axis of the planet's orbit, the distance the planet is from the sun. And that all should make sense. We're going to have a hotter planet if the sun is hotter or if the sun is bigger. But if we're further away from the sun, it's going to be a cooler temperature. The capital A is the albedo. That's how basically shiny, how reflective the planet is. And if the planet is reflecting lots of light, then it's not absorbing it, and it's going to be a cool place. So if we have lots of A, we're going to have a low temperature. A is restricted between 0 and 1. The emissivity, I'm not sure exactly. It turns out it's a way of explaining the greenhouse effect. It has to do with how emissive a body is. And so, obviously, with a smaller emissivity, it's going to be a hotter planet.
That goes from 0 to 1, 2, right?
Yeah.
What is the little a then?
So, the little a is the semi-major axis, or the distance that the... So, approximately speaking, it's the radius, the distance the planet is from the sun. But of course, they're elliptical orbits, so they're not circles.
Wait, semi-major is
Yeah, so that statement won't be on the exam because that's from last time, but the major axis is the full distance and the semi-major axis is half the distance. So it's kind of, so often people say that the semi-major axis is... Yes, across the long way. So one way of saying the semi-major axis is it's the average distance. That is to say, if we take the big distance and the short distance and average them, we're going to get that distance. So it's kind of the big radius. Not on the exam. Yeah, so that's kind of an important fact, that the temperature we're calculating is the temperature of whatever is emitting the light that the planet is producing. So it's not the temperature of the surface of the planet unless there's no atmosphere. So if there is an atmosphere, this is probably the temperature high up in the atmosphere. And typically then it's going to be warmer underneath that blanket.
You do 36 on 212.
212, 36. Structure of matter. So, what's the difference between a solid and a gas? So.
Oh, no, I meant, the sun explode.
Oh, not on your exam.
No, it's not?
No. No, but that's probably the one question from 212 that is not appropriate. Yeah, that's a whole lecture in itself. It will eventually be on your exam,
okay.
But not this one. And maybe only on the final, I guess. So that's kind of another question that probably won't be on your exam, but you really should be able to answer it. So I won't say that it's out of bounds. So what we have is a hot star and a cool star that are at the same distance. And if they had the same radius, the hot star has to way outshine the cool star, right? But now let's look at the numbers and see how it works out. So the yellowish star is the magnitude 3 one, that's the bright one. And the blue one is the dim one. So the only way a cool star could outshine a hot star is if it has a lot more surface area. Questions?
The 212 true false 18. So is that like dealing with like arc seconds or arc minutes, like with what we can see in this question here? Is it always better to have a shorter?
Yes. So resolution is seeing fine detail, So small numbers are better than big numbers, and it doesn't really matter what the numbers are, degrees, minutes, seconds. As a matter of fact, typically 1 or 2 arc seconds would be a typical resolution for an optical telescope. Yeah, because the atmosphere is the problem, right? Less atmosphere is always good. There are a few other advantages of having something in space, like because there isn't night and day, you can aim it for a long period of time at the same object. But the hugely important reason is that there's no atmosphere to look through. So if the atmosphere isn't the limiting feature, then there's an equation that says that the angle that you can resolve depends on the wavelength of light divided by the diameter of the dish. And for a radio telescope, we could make them 10 times bigger than we can make optical telescopes because, you know, it's not a piece of glass, it's a piece of aluminum, it doesn't have to be as smooth. But we've made the wavelength 1,000,000 times bigger. So a single dish produces pretty real fuzzy images. And by putting them together, then we can separate them not by, you know, 10 meters, we can separate them by 1,000 kilometers, and then we can start to get good resolution.
Okay. Just curious, have we put radio dishes like out in space?
That it's something that very commonly comes up, and they may have put small ones up there, but it's not, there isn't anything that's of research interest. But yeah, it's kind of the next obvious thing to do. But radio telescopes kind of by definition are big, and so they don't fit in the shuttle bay, so they have to unfold them. And I wouldn't be surprised if it happens sometimes, and people, it's an obviously good idea, which lots of people have thought about, but it hasn't been done. And it's not quite so critical. For optical telescopes, getting above the atmosphere immediately gives you 100 times better resolution. And if you put something in low Earth orbit, you know, it's just 100 miles further out, so that isn't going to help. So you're going to want to put it on the moon or and Mars, something like that, and then it starts to get expensive.
So where do we find the answers to the tests online?
So if you go to the class website, there's something that's labeled lectures.mp4.
Yeah, I'm there right now.
And then like for 211, you'd go to 211.
Okay.
And then we're talking about last year's exam, so you'd click on 2011.
Yep.
So they have kind of funny names. They all start A211 and then T2 because it's the second test. And then they are short, long, true, false. And those are all AVI files, I think.
Yeah, you probably won't be able to watch the AVI.
Yeah. Okay.
So the more recent ones are MP4s.
So these ones are in 211 and 212?
Yeah, so the 212 ones are obviously a little bit more recent, so those will be in the... So again, back up until you're into the list of the lectures, hit on 212, and then they should be right there. You know, like A212, T2, RTF.mp4.
Okay, thank you, Kirk.
Hmm?
Thank you.
So there are also, incidentally, spectra quizzes. If you right at the lecture level, the spectra quizzes you do, there are also screencasts of those online. Everything that follows. So the